Jen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 30th, 2008. I have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor others, and this is my home group. If I kept lying, I would have had 6 years, but I decided after 1 year of being sober to get honest. It was really hard for me because I was justifying, and I thought I was okay with what I did. And when I got honest, my friend actually came to me, and she's like, I need to tell you something. I lied to you. I'm like, okay, what? And she's like, I don't have 5 years. I have, like, a year, something like that. And she's like, I smoke marijuana. I'm like, oh. And I thought about it. I'm like, wow, that was not a big deal at all. It doesn't change anything the way that I think about her. I'm like, if it was so easy for her, why is it so hard for me? And that's how God works in my life, because I was showing up for meetings all the time when I was lying about my sobriety. And they talk about it and how it works. It says honesty 5 times in, like, the first page. And it just stabbed me in the back every time. I'm like, oh, my God. And God's like, come on, Jen, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And when she got honest with me, God's like, come on, it's time. So I hurried up and called my sponsor who's speaking for me today. I'm like, I need to tell her now or else I'm going to back out. And I'm so glad that I did, because I don't know if I'd still be coming to meetings. You know, I don't know if I'd still be sober. And, you know, if you're lying about your sobriety date or anything, please get honest right away, because it's just, it ate me up inside. It couldn't be who I was. And I'm so grateful for that. And my sponsor, Esther, who I asked to speak tonight, she is an amazing woman in my sobriety date, my sobriety. And she's been there, that too. She's been there throughout everything before, you know, when I was sober the first time and when I relapsed. And she's been there for really big events in my life, just like all my best friends. And she's been there for the wedding and my son's birth and my son's baptism and the new pregnancy, and it's amazing to watch her grow, and she teaches me not to take myself so seriously, you know? Life is not that serious, so I want to give you Esther.
Hey, I'm Esther, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a telemarketer, so if I start to talking like, you know, I'm selling something. Just somebody raise their hand. I see a hand over there. Anyway, my sobriety date is July 5th, 2001. And I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I sponsor others. I hope I am sponsored. It's a big difference from having a sponsor and being sponsored. So I know that lately I've done some silly things that I didn't believe in because my sponsor suggested it, so maybe I am being sponsored. But you know what? I feel better. So that's good. So good to be here. Thanks for that undeserved nod to me. I love it, you know, and I want to be there for more. And I know that you have some great friends, you know, and there's some great people in this room, in this program, all over, you know. And I moved here from D.C., in 2007, never lived outside of D.C., I was allergic to the air in Florida. Like, that was how cloistered I had been, you know, the environment. And I couldn't walk outside without having hives all over me. And it was the pollen, the air, the everything, you know. So I'd never left D.C. And coming from a really close-knit home group, I just never, you know, like, everybody was doing everything wrong in Florida. Like, the meetings were not run right, and people were sharing out of turn. They're supposed to raise their hand, and, you know, there was all this stuff going on, you know, that I was in, like, complete fear all the time, you know, the first, you know, and I went to, like, one or two meetings before I finally got to this meeting, you know, wasn't at this location. And I just knew that I was doomed. I'd made a bad mistake. I shouldn't go back to Florida. I should go back to D.C. because I'm not gonna stay sober. And then, somebody, what's his name? I'm just kidding. Eric, you know, said, you know, I'm sending some people to come pick you up, to take you to a meeting. And here comes Katie and Tiffany and that guy over there, he was driving, and somebody who's not here anymore. I can't remember his name. But, you know, I know his name. But anyway, and at the minute I got in the car, I took a deep, you know, sigh, you know, just a breath. And it felt like home, you know. And And it was wonderful, you know, and you guys carried me, you know, through those first couple of years, you know, it was wonderful. And I started to feel more at home here. And this is, you know, I can say this is my home now, you know, and that's just recently started to feel like that. And I know from my experience in this county, in Pinellas, in Clearwater, I go to Largo, I go to meetings all over the place, I go to Miami, Sarasota. I was like, wow, how did I, like, have these little pockets, you know, of people that I know in AA all over Florida. And it's just the way it works, you know. If I show up and if I, do the next right thing, might not turn out right away the way that I expect it to, but it always turns out the way that God expects it to. And I'm just going to tell you, just in a general way, sometimes I get specific, so a little graphic, so pardon me. I get carried away. just general way, you know, what it was like and what happened, you know, what's like today. And all of you share pretty much the same story, just the details, places, just a little bit different. But for me, I was born in the mountains of the Himalayas. Literally, we were just talking about that. I was born at home in the middle of the night in a little house, you know, in the mountains of the Himalayas. Yeah, my dad delivered me, and so that made me different right from the start. So, and the thing that I think I remember the most in childhood, as it relates to alcoholism, was I always knew, like from the minute I heard about alcohol, that I knew that it was going to be something for me. I knew it, and it was just the way that other people had an attitude towards it, you know. Alcohol, you know. And that's how it was talked about in my family. Very religious. It's supposed to be vegan, but I thought my parents were going to hell because they drank tea, you know, and they ate meat, you know, so I judged everyone right from the get-go, including my parents. And just another way for me to be different, you know, from other people and feel better then, you know. But they would talk about every so often some uncle that got in trouble because he drank, you know? And it was just like that. They would never say it out loud. And I was like, what is this? You know what I mean? And I had to find out. And I knew that it changed something about that person and made that person other than. I might have been maybe 2 or 3 years old when I first realized, you know? And I don't know, some people are born alcoholic, they say, some people, it doesn't matter, you know? I'm like, I'm an alcoholic, you know, I'm a pickle, never to be a cucumber again. I'm over it, you know, I'm not pining for it anymore, you know? I love pickles. You know, I kind of have to, you know? Like, okay, I'm a pickle, you know, now what, so what? I'm a pickle, okay? Pickles, I have fun too, you know? So I don't know, you know, if I was born an alcoholic or if I became an alcoholic. I really don't give a crap anymore, you know. I know I'm an alcoholic. I used to fight it all the time. I'm like, this sucks, man. I can't drink, you know. And my first meeting was 1991, okay. My sobriety date is 2001. So those 10 years were really adventurous, and because I knew all about AA, you know, but I was not giving up any of this. I was going to try this, I'm going to try that guy, I was going to whatever, you know. And I don't know, man, that was a long, hard, you know, 10 years, and I really wanted to have my life turn out the way that I wanted it to turn out, you know. And I used to have this vision of the perfect life, and I would be married with, you know, a couple of kids and white picket fence. I would be a perfect chef, you know, extraordinaire, because I work cooking shows all the time, watch cooking shows all the time, and I hated that little overweight cooking woman, like the fat Contessa. I don't know what her, I call her the fat Contessa. Can't stand her. She just, you know, she was fat, and she could cook, and she had this gorgeous husband. I lived in a beautiful house, you know, and that was my life, you know. I was like, I didn't really think about being thin or anything, you know, but I was like, that, you know what, you know, I can't stand her. You know, I was jealous. I wanted her life, but she left out the little tray of cocaine, the neat little lines for the guests when they came over, you know, some other stuff over here in the little covered jar. And, you know, that's really what I thought, you know, my life was. It was the only normal life that I could envision for myself, you know. And this was part what society said, part what my alcoholic, you know, wanted. I wanted to change, always to be around something that changed the way I feel. And, you know, but I don't know, it was growing up with feeling always that I wanted it to be something different, you know, change the way that I felt. I knew that from a long time, from an early age. And I was thinking to tell my greeting card story. I'm not going to do that. But I still am addicted to cheese, you know. And I'm still looking for that cheeseaholic meeting. You know, I don't think anybody started one yet, but if you have, let me know. But I never really, like, lost a job over cheese, you know, or anything like that. Love cheese. You know, and people say that all the time, but it's really true. I mean, there are things in our lives that we do that we really love to do that never gave us trouble, you know. And but alcohol wasn't one of them, you know. And that first drink that I had, 13 years old, and I found it in my brother's shoebox. Three old Michelobes, they were dusty. And I woke up my sister and her friend who was spending the night. It was 1 a.m. in the morning, and my parents, those horrible, horrible assholes, you know, they were these hard-working, they were both working two jobs, you know, immigrants, left a great, you know, great place, you know, and came here and worked hard, you know, and these are the people that I just hated the most, you know. And my perception has changed so much in the last, 10 years or so. But they were working, you know, they were gone. They weren't at home, you know, and my brothers were supposed to take care of us, and they didn't take care of us very well. And so we left that night and went to the park, and I popped it open and chugged it down, and I was so disappointed. I was so disappointed after all this time and thinking this thing was the thing that I've been looking for, this, you know. And it tasted like crap. And my sister and her friend spit it out, and they said, ew, this sucks. And and I said, I'll drink it, you know, and I couldn't drink it. I was really disappointed, but I didn't give up. It took me 2 more years. I was 15 years old. By this time, I'd found a fake driver's license. I copied the signature. They didn't have to have pictures back then. I'm not going to tell you how old that was. I was slightly under 21 then. And, you know, and I got a six-pack of Colt 45 and silver. Some people remember that. I don't know. No, maybe you don't. And I did, and that's when the ah moment happened. That night was fabulous. It was just the most amazing night of my life. I felt everything that I expected to feel. I knew all these years that was going to happen for me. And I caused my first harm that night. I puked in that friend's parents' master bathroom sink after we had extra large pizza with, you know, extra cheese and pepperoni. So needless to say, it didn't go down the sink. Just kind of hung out there. And I said, I tried, yeah, I turned the water on. And I said, Ruth, I got to go. And I never hung out with her again. And it's so funny because last year she messaged me on Facebook. This freaking Facebook, you know? And she's like, hi, Esther, I live in Orlando. And I'm thinking, I don't want to talk to you. And the amends that I've made, I mean, this is the one amends that I'm just so ego-driven about, you know? And I'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, it worked for me, in other words. I found it, and I chased it, and I chased it, and I chased it. A lot of bad stuff happened, you know, I mean physically, like car accidents, broken bones, you know, physical brutality from other people, you know, all the stuff that goes with it, all of that happened. And and you know, it was just a God thing, you know, watching Oprah for 4 months in a row, and everything she said was, you need help, you need help, you need help. And I thought she meant, you need pills, you need pills, you need pills. And I said, I'm going to get them, you know. So I go to this psychiatrist after psychiatrist, and they're like, we can't give you these pills until you stop drinking for 6 months. And I'm like, what are you, crazy? You know, nobody does that. You know, nobody's, you know. So one night I was going to kill myself, you know. I was had it, you know, and called the suicide hotline, and a line was busy. And I called it again, and the line was still busy, you know. Then I called I called the state troopers. Yeah, the line was busy. I'm not kidding. Oh, and I called AA. Nobody answered. Nobody answered. And because I didn't know what AA was all about, you know, but I knew that somebody along the way had said, you know, we always joke, you're an alcoholic. I was desperate, you know, I really was. And then I was going to go home and kill myself, kill everybody else, you know. what crazy thoughts. And I had a moment of clarity that, you know, that there was a bad person in the house, and that bad person was me. And I called the cops, the local Germantown Police Department. And I said, I'm going to kill everyone, I'm going to kill myself. And the guy goes, have you been drinking? And I'm like, yeah, so what, you know? That started like a long, you know, he said, listen, you know, I'm going to get you some help, but you got to wait, you know. And he sent me to this guy named Steve, and I called this guy named Steve, and I said, he's not going to answer. And the cop said, he's going to answer, just call him. And I called him and talked to him, and he said, don't kill anybody or don't kill yourself until Wednesday. And that's all I could remember. And I said, Wednesday? Why Wednesday? Because you're going to come in and see me. We're going to talk about things first. So that was it. That was 1991, you know, the summer of 1991. And honestly, there's a lot more in between, because I took my, I went to 18-month rehab. It didn't really work. But I met you guys there, you know. I met lots of people like you. And I always knew I could come back here, you know. And I tried all kinds of different things. And doctors, psych wards. I haven't been to jail. I was actually handcuffed once, but I talked my way out of it. And, you know, and so when I really was at the end of my rope, I tried everything, you know. I was just flabbergasted. And some guy comes along that I used to get high with and, you know, in and out of AA with, and he had looked good, you know. He talked different. And I said, what have you been doing? You look really great. He said, I'm going to AA. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I've been working the steps. He had 5 months sober. That was Todd knows him, Crazy Mike. I don't know, you know, it's just something snapped, you know. He said, you want to go to a meeting? And I said, okay. And that was in March of 2001. And I was just graduating law school by then. And I knew in the heart of my heart that I was dreading life so badly. I'd hidden from life as long as I could. And I thought, okay, maybe if I just go to med school, I can put everything off for another 4 years, you know. And I started looking around for that. And this guy comes along. He promptly gets kicked out of where he was living because he was hanging out with me. And so, you know, he comes and stays with me for a couple of weeks. And we don't do anything but sleep and go to meetings, you know. And at 5 o'clock, we wake up in the afternoon and get to a meeting. And that started it, you know, the first time that I really ever, all those years, read about the first step and heard about it in meetings. His sponsor, by this time, Mike wasn't allowed to pick me up by himself. So every time he'd come, like, his sponsor would be driving him. I'm like, what's up with this, you know? Mike was just get in the car, you know? And so that one time when we were driving in the meeting, it was this meeting called Sarah Night Special. And I didn't know that it was Women's Weekend, and all the women were gone. And it was just me and Mike and his sponsor and a bunch of guys, you know? And his sponsor said, why are you coming to these meetings? You know, like, I don't know. It's like, are you an alcoholic? And I said, maybe. I don't know. I'm just checking it out. I mean, deep down in my soul, the last thing I wanted was to be an alcoholic. I've been there before. Were you going to tell me not to drink and go to meetings and do all this crap? And I wasn't all about it. I wasn't. I'm a lawyer, you know. But there was something inside of me, you know. He was asking these questions. And I said, you know, maybe, you know. He said, well, why don't you pick up a white chip? They call them 24-hour chips back home. I said, why? He's like, well, if you're not an alcoholic, it's not going to hurt you, you know. I thought he was daring me, so I said, oh, I'll pick up a white chip, you know. And so the minute I said that, something just broke loose inside of me, you know. There was this truth that I could not deny any longer. And it was the first time I was ever honest with myself. And I knew to my heart, to my core, that I was an alcoholic. And I just could not say it out loud. But I started crying, you know, in that parking lot. And I cried for 45 minutes. And I cried all through my chip getting, you know. And this guy, Shannon's husband now, you know, can't remember his name either. Senioritis. I'm only 21. You know, he leaned over and said, you have to stop crying because I don't know where the mop is, you know, and I went like this, and we all laughed, right? And it was that laughing, you know, relating in, you know, laughing with each other, and I felt something, you know, give, and I didn't know it then, but I had actually done, you know, my first real first step, and didn't really know where to go from there, but I got a sponsor, because Mike had got a sponsor, and he was looking real good. And she said, I said, what do I do next? She's like, well, just come to meetings, you know. And I'm like, all right, I can do that. And I just started coming to meetings, you know. And she said, the meetings can be your higher power. They can be your second step. Because she knew how I felt about organized religion, you know. My parents were just so, you know, I was still so had such a big misconception about, you know, what giving, loving, long-suffering women, you know, people these were, I said, okay, I can do that, you know, I did, you know, I came to meetings, I heard people say things that I related to, like, you know, I just had my first solid shit, you know, I had a guy share that, and I laughed out loud, and it was like, I just had mine too, my first one, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about, I mean, it's hot, I mean, you know, it's rough on the stomach, and then we laughed again, you know, and it was the sharing and laughing, you know what I mean, that really sealed it for me, like I identified with you, you know, and I knew I was in a place, and then I would hear other things, you know, like, oh, I always felt like, you know, crap, and then I did 90 and 90, and after the 90 days, I felt better. And I'm looking at this guy, and this guy looks like this, you know, the guys I hung out with at bars. And I knew, didn't know him, but I knew lots of guys like him. And see and hear somebody like that sitting in an AA meeting saying, I felt better after 90 days, you know. I believed him. I didn't believe my sponsor, you know, or that person with 29,000 years, you know, like leading the meeting. I believe this guy who was like, you know, wearing a ripped flannel shirt with a scruffy, you know, like not a real good kempt goatee and saying, I feel better. 90 days in AA, you know? And I'm like, all right, okay, I'll do it, you know? And I guess that was the first instance, you know, of turning it over, you know, trying something different. And, you know, and working on through the step three, I really didn't know. I thought I'd have to have a white robe in the rain, you know, Shawshank Redemption style. How do you turn your will and your life over, you know? How do you do that? I read that over and over again. I read the third step in the 12 and 12. I read where I thought I was supposed to read in the big book. I had no idea, you know, and simply put, my sponsor, again, you know, just said, look, just go on with the rest of the steps. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, do your fourth step. At some of these, we balked. I was like, wow, fourth step. And I'd read that, you know, and talked about telling my secrets. And there were secrets I wasn't going to tell anybody, you know. There was one secret. And it's our simple, we're talking about simple secrets today, you know, at dinner. How we think they're such a big deal. Such a big deal. And they're not, you know. So it was just that I felt my daughter was in the way of my drinking. And I was so ashamed, you know, to feeling that, you know, just so much shame behind that. And I could not. And once, you know, once I told her, you know, that one secret, you know, somebody said, you don't have to write it down. Just go tell your sponsor you're never going to tell her. And I ran up to her and was like, I can't do the fourth step because that's something I'm never going to tell you. And she goes, oh, okay, well, what is it, you know? And And I'm like, you're not supposed to ask me that, you know? And but next thing you know, it's coming out, and I'm crying again, you know? It's just these tears, these healing tears. And so I was able to do that and go on with my fourth step. I put dead people and unborn people on my fourth step. My resentment runs deep, you know? And I found out that I'm petty and I'm a victim, you know, and I have a terrible time with forgiveness, you know, and forgiving myself, forgiving other people. I found all kinds of things about myself, and it was freeing, you know, and it's really true. You know, we can really join the ranks of humankind, look the world in the eye after you do that, you know, now, because I realized I'm not the only one, I'm not alone, and, you know, other people felt the same way, did the same things. Some were far worse than me, you know, thank God. and then it was a sixth and seventh step ongoing for me. I say that seventh step prayer, I love it. It's one of the most powerful moments, the first time that I ever discovered that prayer, it starts with the words, my creator. Who better to accept me just the way I am, or who better for me to turn to than the one that created me? If I'm okay, if he's okay with me, I'm okay with that, you know? So when I say that prayer that starts with, my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad, you know? And I feel free. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. It's a beautiful place to be, you know? And I do that on an ongoing basis, you know? And I went ahead with my eighth and ninth steps. I have a lot of financial amends to do. Yeah. It's not even funny because, you know, I took out loans for law school, and have I really practiced law? Maybe for like 3 years, you know? So I'm a telemarketer, okay? So I'm not making all that money. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. But I have made living amends, you know, and I do so on a daily basis. And in working with others, 10, 11, and 12, you know, allows me to be a part of the mainstream of AA society, you know? And I mean, I think that it's one of those things that I, you know, continue to take personal inventory, because if I want to stay here, you know, I can't hold anything inside. You know, I got to let things go. I've got to make amends. I've got to see where I'm growing with my asset list, you know, and I have to bounce things off other people. And the first thing that I learned to do in AA was pray, a foxhole prayer. You know, I prayed the foxhole prayer. And now I find myself praying the foxhole prayer, you know, all the time. And I mean, I do work with others. You know, I do try to practice this principles in all my affairs, except for my employer. That's another story. But I've never been fired except for in sobriety. So I left my employer off my 12-step list, right? I'm entitled. They don't pay me enough. They suck. I'm too good for them, you know. And all the above, and perfect. And, you know, so really, just to wrap this up in about a minute, I've worked through all the steps, and my life has gotten better as a result. And that feeling, you know, of uselessness and self-pity, here I am, you know, had just reached all of my life's goals, you know. Going to graduate law school, that was like the thing was going to fix me. And all I wanted to do was kill myself, you know. And all of those feelings, now I know everything happened, you know, just the way it was supposed to happen to bring me here. I had to learn to accept my alcoholism, you know. And now that I'm an alcoholic, I live, you know, in the now what, you know. So what, now what, you know, now what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to live a sober life, you know, recovery. And I do that. I mean, it's just a huge network of alcoholics. Come down to Monday Night Speakers, they just elected me the birthday girl. So I'll be wearing the hat. So I'm real excited about that. So, you know, and there's opportunities. You know, Florida State Convention is looking for volunteers. You know, please come and help. You know, there's all kinds of stuff to do, you know, in AA. And I live in that so what today, you know, on a daily basis. I wouldn't have it any other way, you know. I might think sometimes life would be better if, but I've tried that. Life is not better if. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And that's the message, hopefully, you know, that I would like to pass on today. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're right where you're supposed to be. And this is the best place for me. You know, there's no other place better for me than solidly in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm glad I'm here today, you know. The thick and thin, and good and bad, and all of that, this always stays the same, you know, and I can rely on that, and so can you. Thank you.